Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome on this Friday the 14th, Catholic Answers Live. Two great guests for you today. Second hour, Father Paul Scalia will be here with us to discuss the saints. This hour will be a little more earthly as we devote the entire hour to the church in the news. A lot happening in the church and in the world today. Do you have questions about what's going on in the church, or maybe how the church is being reported on in the news media, or how the world is interacting with the church these days? 888-318-7884 is our number. This hour, the Catholic Church in the News, 888-318-7884. And to help us make sense of the news, we are joined this hour by Dr. Matthew Bunsen. Dr. Bunsen is the senior fellow at for the St. Paul Center for Biblical Theology, and he's one of America's leading authorities on the papacy and the church. He's a faculty chair at the Catholic Distance University, the author or co-author of more than 50 books, a senior contributor at EWTN, and senior editor at the National Catholic Register, where you will hear him on Sundays if you have a Catholic, if you get Catholic radio. And I'm guessing that if you're listening to this program, you probably do. You can hear Dr. Bunsen each Sunday as co-host of Register Radio. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, thanks for being with us today on Catholic Answers Live.
Great to be with you, as always. Although, given the news that we're often seeing these weeks, I don't know if anyone can make sense of some of these stories.
Well, you better try, because that's why we have you here. I mean, are you already making excuses like the first 3 minutes of the show? It is. We live in unusual times, or I guess as the Chinese proverb, it's supposed to be like a proverb to be a kind of a curse. May you live in interesting times, and we do.
It is. Yeah, we really do. Very much so. The news, it's the news cycle, because it's 24/7, is very difficult to keep up with to begin with. But now we have such a multiplicity of news options,
right,
and different sources that I have taken a pledge that I will never use the term fake news. But when you read a lot of the things that are being reported, including about the church, that's a phrase, unfortunately, that does remain very apt.
It pops right to mind sometimes. You kind of think of in some eras of the church, had there been Twitter and Facebook and cable news 24 hours a day, we would have had a very different impression of things. I'm thinking of, say, Pope Paul VI or Pope Pius XI, or, you know, the pressure, the daily mm-hmm. pressure of the news cycle just wasn't on these earlier popes, even in the modern times.
Well, exactly so. The pace of news was a lot slower, so stories took much longer to develop. Now we have to be very cognizant of what can happen just in the course of one news cycle. And I mean, one news cycle really now is just a few hours,
yeah,
because of the different places you can go. Twitter itself is one of those mechanisms for news distribution, but at the same time, it's also the mechanism for false news distribution. And you then have to play a double game of trying to get the news that's true and accurate out there, but then you have to be batting down what we hear all the time are inaccuracies or just outright misinformation.
Well, can I ask you a little bit about the Pope in that context himself, Pope
yeah.
Francis? Because sometimes I don't know how to figure out what he is doing as far as the use of the news. Is he mm-hmm. is he just brilliant at and in many ways it seems obvious that he is brilliant at using the news, or is he really bad at it? Because sometimes he doesn't seem brilliant, or is he just not playing the game and he's allowing that he's just being Pope as he understands how to be Pope and he's not playing the news game?
Yeah, I think it's at times a little bit of all of the above.
Uh-huh.
This last week we had the interview that was released in La Repubblica, the Italian newspaper, that the Pope gave once again to Eugenio Scalfari, who is the founder and one of the main editors for La Repubblica, in which he had quite a few things to say, in particular about apparently U.S. foreign policy.
Mm-hmm.
Relative to alliances with Russia. And it seemed at first blush that when you read this story, certainly in the original Italian, that the Pope is talking about what he calls dangerous alliances. Now, you have to have some knowledge of the context and history of these interviews to appreciate some of the irony here, because he has given several interviews to Scalfari in the past. Scalfari, I'm not picking on people who are very elderly, but he's 93 years old, and he does these interviews and then goes back to his office and transcribes them from memory. He does not typically take notes. So while we can gauge that the general facts of the interview are probably accurate, we can call into question some of the particulars. In this case, the idea of dangerous alliances, according to this story, was Pope Francis attaching the United States to Russia, as well as China, North Korea, and the Assad regime. Now, again, at first blush, this looks like a potential media disaster. But what we're actually seeing is Pope Francis speaking to the three major superpowers in the world of the United States, Russia, and China, and urging them to be very careful in how they're crafting alliances globally, where we're dividing the world up and potentially making a dangerous situation right now much worse. And it feeds into something that Pope Francis has been talking about for a while, which is the potential of a third world war that's sort of slowly simmering. So that's a perfect example of Francis's highly unusual media style, but we all have to be careful of the context.
888-318-7884, our number. If you have questions or comments on these, when we do Church in the News, we'll take your comments as well about the situation of the Church in the News. A hard one to bring up, and I imagine callers might want to, so I'm going to preempt that. And I'm going to use delicate language because I know we are a family show. But an arrest or some arrests at an apartment in the Vatican recently. Now, I say that in the Vatican. I don't know if it was in the city state or outside, or, you know, if it was a Vatican-owned apartment. You can fill me in on that. But including some gross misconduct using drugs and involving sex. Mm-hmm. What is this all about?
Yeah, for those who may not be aware of it, this is a story that originally broke in an Italian newspaper called Il Fatto Quotidiano. And the story was broken about the end of June, and it related to the fact that the Vatican Gendarmerie was called and raided an apartment that is technically part of the building, the Palazzo Sant'Uffizio of the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith. Now, that right there,
wow,
should raise our radar.
Yeah.
Now, what they found supposedly was a party in progress involving, as you say, apparently narcotics and promiscuous sexual activity that of the most base, lewd kind. And some arrests were made, and subsequently attached to the story was the supposed alleged arrest of a 50-year-old Monsignor who works in the Vatican, who happens to be the secretary to Cardinal Francesco Coco Palmeria, who is the current head of the Pontifical Council for Legislative Texts, who is also a very prominent figure in this current pontificate. So right there you have the makings for a potentially very large scandal. Here's what we know with relative certainty, is that some kind of an arrest was made, some kind of a party or an event was broken up by the Vatican police. The reporting of Edward Penton of the National Catholic Register has been able to confirm a great deal of that, and I would encourage everyone to take a good look at Edward's piece at the ncregister.com. And I mention that because this is obviously a story fraught with very salacious details. And we need to be careful about some of the sourcing on this and some of the details. So if you're going to wade into this, I would recommend reading Edward's stuff, because he comes at it with a certain appropriate sensitivity to the subject matter.
The Vatican is no stranger to – well, actually has a long history of,
right,
of sexual scandal. Now I ask you kind of as a theologian as well, mm-hmm, is there a kind of – maybe subtext of spiritual attack here, that an idea that, I mean, that the evil one very much wants to attack those who are in these positions at the Vatican, or is there something else at play?
Very much so. I think there are a couple of factors at play here. Let's just assume that the basic structure of this story is correct. It falls into a pattern that we've seen over the years. Under Pope Benedict XVI and into the pontificate of Pope Francis, and Pope Francis has talked about this very plainly, he has condemned and recognized the presence of what was known as the gay mafia or a gay lobby. That has been active in the Vatican over the years. Part of it is because of the allure of power and lapses in appropriate reforms and in a proper spiritual life within the Curia. And that's not a blanket condemnation of the Roman Curia. In fact, I know many, many priests who work in Rome who are fine, beautiful priests dedicated to their work. So we need to avoid blanket condemnations. When you look through the history of the church, however, we can go all the way back to Peter Damian. We can look at St. Ambrose of Milan in the 4th century. These are saints. These are doctors of the church. These are fathers of the church who recognized the need for constant reform and vigilance on the part of those who work and serve in the church. And the Holy See, the Vatican itself, is always going to be under close scrutiny, but there's also going to attract people who are drawn, as I was saying, to power, to influence, whose lives are far from exemplary. And I agree that there is as well a very powerful spiritual component, and which is one of the reasons why Pope Benedict XVI was so concerned about bringing an authentic reform to the Curia that extended beyond just the bureaucratic reforms, institutional reforms, but to a real spiritual renewal. And I think this is something that Pope Francis has talked about, and slowly I think we're seeing this. But there are always going to be tragic, and I use that term seriously, tragic examples of these types of moral failings. And we just have to accept the fact that reform is always going to be needed. As Pope Gregory I said, Semper Ecclesia Reformanda, the church is always in need of reform because we are sinners.
Dr. Matthew Bunsen is our guest this hour. Our topic, the church in the news. If you have any questions about the church in the news, maybe stories that you have come across or read, something that's disturbing you about the church in the news, something you would like to celebrate about the church in the news, we're happy to take any calls in that area. Dr. Bunsen is senior contributor to EWTN and senior editor at the National Catholic Register. Our number, 888-318-7884. If you prefer the spelled version, 888-31-TRUTH. We'll be right back with more after this on Catholic Answers Live.
It's all about the truth. Catholic Answers Live.
Christian men, beware. With the idols of materialism, entertainment, and the flesh, it's plain to see that the world wants you for its own. Face it, it's tempting and easy to be a man of the world. Father Terence Ehrman has a challenge for you. Be a man of God instead. In his new book, Man of God, Lessons to Young Men About Life, Sex, Friendship, Vocation, and Loving with the Heart of Christ, Father Ehrman draws on his experiences counseling men who are struggling to live in the world but not be of the world. In a unique format, he offers a plan for ongoing conversion, holy spiritual direction for all men who want to master themselves and be transformed from within. Order your copy of Man of God today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 10:16, Jesus tells his apostles that he is sending them out like sheep into the midst of wolves. They are to be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. He warns them that they will be flogged in synagogues and dragged before governors and kings, but they are not to worry about what to say, because when they speak, it will be the Spirit of the Father speaking through them. Now, how does that work? How can I be sure that it is the Spirit speaking through me and not my own ideas? When one is in danger and speaks from his heart in defense of his Lord, there is little chance that he is speaking from his ego. Nevertheless, should we be incorrect and misspeak, we have his church to guide us with the authority it received from him. It gives us a security that we can find nowhere else. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Church in the News, our topic today on Catholic Answers Live, perfect Friday conversation to have because the church really has been in the news a lot. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, our guest this hour, and you can hear him Sundays on Register Radio on your Catholic radio station. We've got lots of callers, so maybe we'll let the callers lead the conversation for a little while, Dr. Bunsen?
Sure.
All right, let's go to Carlos in Orlando, Florida, listening on EWTN. Carlos, your question or comment for Dr. Bunsen.
Hello, Dr. Bunsen. It's great to be on. Thank you for having me. My question is regarding today's topic is Catholic in the News. So my question is regarding where most of us get our news, social media. And my question is, in a nutshell, how should a Catholic, a practicing Catholic, go about etiquette on social media? So, you know, like, is it wrong for a practicing Catholic to share a link on, you know, a view on abortion that may be aggressive on either side, or a Catholic who shares news that aren't, that don't necessarily line up with the church's teaching?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's a great question, actually, because we're all deluged with links. Anyone who has more than two friends on Facebook, you're dealing almost on an hourly basis with people sending you links and posting on your timeline. And then when you get into things like Snapchat and Twitter, it's even exacerbates the problem. The first starting point that I always recommend is be very careful where you do your own social media. So, for example, what are your links? What are your go-to pages? Usually, if you start in a healthy environment or as healthy as you can find, you'll be improving your overall social media experience, but also those of other people around you. So the key word is always prudence. We want to exercise the virtue of prudence in how we choose our social sites and then what we do with it. The one thing, too, to bear in mind is that there's courtesy and there's also charity when you're dealing with distributing links to stories. Know that a lot of people will be shocked and a lot of people don't appreciate suddenly getting videos and other things that are, for them, really shocking or difficult to take. And so unless you're willing to warn everyone that the content, say, in a pro-life link or something like that, or if it relates to Mosul, a situation in Iraq, that you need to exercise that care in sending out links to people. And just be aware that not everyone wants to receive these. So you're also doing justice to your friends by being fair to them and not contributing to sort of the sensory overload that we have of social media.
Carlos?
Yes, sir.
How'd it strike you?
I'm sorry?
How did that strike you?
I think it makes perfect sense. I think the church is, you know, we got to watch the church's image above all.
And share the good news, brother.
Yeah, we got that name on our back, so we got to take care of it.
Thank you very much for that call, Carlos. Dr. Bunsen, I kind of suspect he fell asleep during your answer. I'm sorry. He's going to have to go back and listen to that answer. Jerry in Sheraton, Iowa, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM satellite radio. Your question or comment for Dr. Bunsen?
Yes. Thank you for taking my call. My question is, we recently in the news, Father Martin, the Jesuit, wrote the book about welcoming, you know, the homosexuals into the church, and we have a couple of cardinals, Tobin and Dolan, out in Newark and New Jersey, or Newark and New York, you know, being part of parades, welcoming them into the cathedral, and which is fine. We want to welcome everybody, but what is the Vatican doing about really making sure that the true teaching of the church is out there, that the true message of Christ and how we should live our lives is coming through, and what responsibility do our bishops, cardinals, priests have in communicating that information?
All right, Jerry, let's let Dr. Bunsen take a shot at that.
Yeah, it's a great question, especially considering the amount of publicity, the amount of marketing that Father Martin has had for his book. And the book is called Building a Bridge, How the Catholic Church and the LGBT Community Can Enter into a Relationship of Respect, Compassion, and Sensitivity. He has, of course, a wide presence in media, so at times it's very difficult to refute a lot of the problems that people have in this. So probably the best starting point for this is to take a look, if you can, at a number of the very critical reviews that have been done about this book. I'm thinking, for example, of Father Jerry Murray, who recently did a piece for the National Catholic Register. There are a large number of critiques out there. I think even Eve Tushnet, who wrote, I think, a piece in the Washington Post, critiquing the book very solidly. So on the one hand, read those reviews and distribute those to people who may be very confused about and thinking somehow that Father Martin's position in this book is the official position regarding the Church's teachings on this. The other is to go back to, A, what the Church actually teaches, so that the Catechism is very clear about our teaching on homosexuality, and read what a lot of the bishops have to say. We can go back, for example, to a discussion of New Ways Ministry, which is one of those, it's a gay-positive ministry, as it calls itself. All we need to know is that in 2010, Cardinal Francis George, president of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops at the time, made a very clear official announcement that this was an organization that could not legitimately speak for Catholics. And that was already preceded by the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith back, I think, in 1999, that issued its own prohibitions against organizations like this. But then more positively, we can support the work, for example, I think of Courage, which is doing everything right in terms of outreach to homosexual persons. And from that standpoint, that's an organization that we want to support. So there's a lot of things that we can do positively, but on the other is we need to be clear in our own lives of what the Church teaches and not be afraid to speak about it in culture.
Thanks, Jerry, very much for that call. How much do you think, Dr. Bunsen, that this – I mean, clearly Father Martin's book is about the LGBT community and all that, but
right.
There's just a general desire not to accept the teaching of Christ and of the Church on human sexuality. Overall,
yes.
There's. It's not as if we're doing these. Like Father Martin's book is coming out in a vacuum. There's a general rebellion against what Christ Himself taught about human sexuality.
Well, there is, and when we look at the polling data, the data reveal that not just the average person, but Catholics in large numbers, are largely buying into what the culture out there is telling us. And it's a disaster, realistically, but it's a failure on all of our part to help catechize ourselves, each other, the younger generations in particular, in the whole area of human sexuality, of the dignity of the human person. I mean, it goes back to some of these most fundamental issues of the contraceptive culture that Pope Paul VI warned us about in Humanae Vitae, the emergence of an abortion culture, the whole culture of death that John Paul II told us about when we go to Evangelium Vitae, when we look at Veritatis Splendor, recapturing of the moral sense. So for all of us, it's easy to throw your hands up and say this is a hopeless situation, that we're looking at the total collapse of marriage, of family life, of human sexuality. But this is really an opportunity for us to redouble our own commitment to the faith. When we know that authentic understanding of the human person, human sexuality, works every time it's tried, and we can offer then this alternative view to the world and evangelize with joy, but be positive about it.
Dr. Matthew Bunsen, our guest, senior contributor at EWTN and senior editor at the National Catholic Register, which, by the way, did a very fine interview with Father Martin and lots of good reporting around the book. I suggest you take a look at that if you are interested in that. The Church in the News is our topic. 888-318-7884, our number. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
We're here for you. Give us a call today on Catholic Answers Live.
This is all about, let's go ride Harleys.
Let's get quiet and go into contemplative prayer. So I want to show men that real Christians are cowboys. If you're sold out for Jesus, there's nothing more masculine you can do.
Bear Wozniak leads a rolling retreat across the United States. Join these real Catholic men as they ride from the Atlantic coast of Florida to the Pacific coast of California, all the while going deeper into their relationship with the Lord. Long Ride Home with Bear Wozniak, Sunday at 10 p.m. Eastern on EWTN-TV.
As legend tells it, 500 years ago, a disaffected Augustinian priest nailed his 95 theses to the door of the Wittenberg Cathedral. The evidence that he actually did this is pretty thin, but Martin Luther's objections to Catholic teachings concerning purgatory and indulgences set off a series of countless ruptures that the Church suffers to this very day. The faithful Catholic wants to be God's instrument in healing these ruptures, but may not know where to begin. Join us this September 28th to 30th as we tackle the topic at Catholic Answers 4th National Apologetics Conference, the reunion of all Christians, a lively and inspiring conference designed to ignite and inform your faith. We've got an all-star lineup of speakers guaranteed to fire you up. Catholic historian Steve Weidenkopf, apologist Mark Brumley, apologist Devin Rose, plus all of your favorite Catholic Answers apologists. This is an event you don't want to miss. This is where it all begins. Join us this September for a conference that is sure to leave you wanting more. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 1-888-291-8000 today to register. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. We're giving our listeners a chance to download a free copy of an MP3 by Trent Horn and Patrick Madrid when you sign up for the Catholic Answers Live newsletter and you become a member of the Radio Club, where we, you know, we put a whole little bunch of little cool stuff in that Radio Club email each week. We try to make it not too much to digest, but some fun stuff in there, some really fascinating stuff in there, and we'd love to send it to you. The way you get it, you just text the word Madrid, M-A-D-R-I-D, to 44222 on your cell phone, and then we send you directions and about how to be a Radio Club member, and you automatically get the MP3 download of The Communion of Saints and Purgatory by Trent Horn and Patrick Madrid. That's why the word Madrid's there, because Patrick Madrid, it's his interview. Madrid to the number 44222. Get that free MP3 and become a member of the Radio Club. This hour, we're talking with Dr. Matthew Bunsen about the Church in the News, all kinds of news out there. I want to ask my own question real quickly before I go back to calls, and we do have a lot of calls. Liu Xiaobo died this week in China, a famous dissident in China who stood up to the communist government there. Any news on progress or lack of progress on the Church being given its appropriate liberty in China?
Yeah, well, we hear constant reporting, none of it confirmed yet, regarding the slow movement of Vatican relations with China. I know that Pope Benedict XVI, one of his hopes had been for some time that some sort of a normalization could take place, effecting some kind of a concordat with the Chinese government. That hasn't happened. What we're seeing typically in China today is that the persecution of the Church varies very much from province to province. So we hear, for example, about some parts of China where churches are being bulldozed, where Christians are being arrested, where bishops are disappearing, and then it's milder in different parts. There is a general effort on the part of the Chinese government to maintain very strict control over religious belief because they see this as a real threat to the political domination of the country. So I'm not particularly optimistic at this point based on what all the reports that we get. But let's not lose sight of the fact that China is on a pace to become one of, if not the largest, Christian countries in the world. And what I mean by that is just the sheer number of practitioners is growing every day. And we know that the church is committing resources to the region. And that understanding is tantamount to the recognition of the need for all of us to keep praying for those who are suffering in China, but also to continue working in our own way to promote the faith in across the world, especially in places where the church is being persecuted the most.
888-318-7884, our number. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, our guest. We go now to Ken in Hayes, Kansas, listening on Divine Mercy Radio. Ken, your question or comment for Dr. Bunsen.
Well, hey, yes, actually, this kind of addresses the call earlier on Father Martin's book. And I wanted to address it because I actually saw the article in First Things, and it was emailed to me, and it was emailed to a group of people. Well, one of the individuals who got the email happened to be gay and really made a comment. He said he was now a former Catholic and made the comment. Obviously, there's always those excuses and things that come up, but one of the things that came up, and it's kind of irritating because it seems like it's the old standby or go-to for people who have an issue with the church, and that's the whole pedophilia issue. You know, it was brought up, and it was basically said, you know, the church needs to correct this issue. And if it's my understanding, and I didn't want to respond to it at all, but before I really knew the answer, but it's my understanding the whole pedophilia issue is a very, if you look at the numbers, it's like point something percent. It's very, very incredibly low, but that seems to be the go-to complaint
that
a lot of people have with the church.
So how big or what are we talking about in terms of percentage numbers and the damage done from the pedophilia scandals, Dr. Bunsen?
Yeah, well, I had the task, I would not call it the pleasure in any sense of the word, to have co-authored a book on this very topic some years back with Greg Erlandson, Pope Benedict XVI and the Sex Abuse Crisis. So it really necessitated a detailed study into the whole crisis. And, of course, that's just part of anyone who follows the church today, academically or journalistically. This is an issue you need to stay on top of. So I can state that the statistics are very clear, that if we look just at the United States, for example, from about 1950 to about 2010, the total number of priests who were engaged in this behavior hovers around 3 to 4%. That is statistically lower than the general male population that's out there. So there has been a serious misrepresentation of the numbers as a percentage of the population of priests who engaged in this horrendous activity. Now, we always have to be very clear that one case is too many and that unbelievable mistakes happened, were made on the part of church leaders over the years in how they dealt with this problem. We can dig into all of the minutiae as to how it happened and what the bishops were thinking at the time. It is also a statement of fact that since 2002 in the United States, as a result of the norms and the charter and the vigilance on the part of the U.S. bishops through its auditing program, the Catholic Church in the United States, and I state this objectively, is now considered the role model in the United States institutionally for dealing with the sex abuse issue, for creating a safe environment for children and for minors. And so much so that the norms that we use here in the United States are being taken around the world and are being implemented in the specific situations for the church all over, as well as other institutions that now look to us for how to craft their own programs for creating a safe environment.
Thanks, Ken, for that call. We've got a load of calls to get to, and it's striking to hear you say it, Dr. Bunsen. You know, 3 or 4% of priests over that amount of time. On the one hand, as you said, it's lower than what you would find in the general population of males. On the other hand, it's a horrifying number.
Oh, yeah. There's no question about it. And it is a problem that we continue to grapple with as cases are revealed. And that's part of the added necessity in this situation of transparency in how we go about dealing with this crisis, as well as clear statements of how bishops should deal with the crisis. And one of the things that we learned from the disaster of the previous 15, 20 years is that when the laws, the canon law, and common sense were applied, this crisis was generally avoided. When we made mistakes institutionally is when we got into very serious trouble and when we turned a blind eye to not just what was sinful and wrong, but was also illegal, both in the sense of civil and canon law. So we need to apply the norms that we have. We have to have a zero tolerance, but we also need to make certain that the norms that we're applying are just and actually accomplish what we're trying to do rather than in any sense acting out of fear or out of a misguided effort to protect the institution.
We go now to Andrew in Springfield, Massachusetts, listening on the Catholic Answers app. Andrew, your question or comment about the church in the news for Dr. Bunsen.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Bunsen. I appreciate everything you do. I don't understand why it's so difficult for the Holy See to make these corrections, or even on our local diocese, we've had priests that are promoting this lifestyle and nothing is done. And I don't understand why that's allowed to continue on. And we're giving everybody all this ammunition to attack the church over and over again. And it feels like lately I'm right back in that same thing again with all this news going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you're referring, for example, to the sex abuse crisis, I can look at the way that the media tends to cover stories like this. And I'm not just blanket condemnation of the media. But take a look, for example, at the accusations that were recently made, the charges that were made against Cardinal Pell of Australia, who is a high-ranking Vatican official who has now taken a leave of absence and has gone back to Australia to fight what he sees are false and scurrilous charges made against him. The Time Magazine cover, for example, the Time Magazine's coverage, for example, and elsewhere discuss this particular case as though nothing has been done in the last 15 years within the church to correct this problem or to put in place norms and regulations that actually do work. Anytime a story like this is reported, you would come away with the impression that this is the first time that the church has actually been forced, as they say, to confront this problem. When in fact, as we were just discussing, so much has gone on that to report something other than that this is a problem that the church is continuing to deal with but has actually implemented and made immense progress in is, in my opinion, journalistically untrue. And one of the things that we need to do as Catholics is to confront this problem forthrightly. Yes, this has been a disaster, but let's not also lose sight of what we have done because we're in a different space now in how we deal with this problem. Are there going to be more cases? Almost certainly. But the one thing that we do have as well is a whole new generation of bishops in position in dioceses and archdioceses across the United States who were younger priests when this first struck, who have grown up, have matured, and become many of the leaders that we have today with an acute awareness of the problem. And when you go to the bishops' meetings, for example, and the USCCB meetings in Baltimore in particular each fall, I can guarantee you they are keenly aware of the problem and they are not trying to hide from it.
Thank you, Andrew, for that call. We have to take a quick break. More Church in the News with Dr. Matthew Bunsen on Catholic Answers Live right after this.
We're glad you're with us. Stick around for more Catholic Answers Live. Hey everyone, Carlo Broussard here, and I'm here to tell you about a very special promotion we look forward to every year, our annual store-wide summer sale in the online shop at Catholic.com. This spectacular online event includes savings of 10 to 50% and more in some cases on every book, tract, CD, DVD, ebook, and MP3 we carry, including my new DVD, Why God Still Matters. With lower prices and a great selection, it's by far the best online Catholic sale of the summer. So log on now and all this month to the shop at shop.catholic.com and take advantage of our very special prices. You know it's all good stuff because it's from the people you know and trust at Catholic Answers.
You've heard that St. Paul Street Evangelization supports hundreds of teams of evangelists sharing the good news. But did you know that some of these teams are public prayer stations? Set up a sign on the sidewalk and offer prayer and encouragement to those you encounter. Everyone needs prayer. Try this new method of witnessing to Jesus. Contact St. Paul Street Evangelization to get started at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have a book to give to anyone to explain exactly why Catholics believe what we believe? The good news is that now there is. Why We're Catholic is the groundbreaking new resource by apologist Trent Horn, that one book you can hand to anyone as a starting point for helping them find their way into or back to the practice of the Catholic faith. Don't miss out on the most important, life-changing book to come along in years. Order your copies of Why We're Catholic today by calling 1-888-291-8000, visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Homeschool Connections has recently formed a partnership featuring a dual enrollment program with Franciscan University of Steubenville. Our website is homeschoolconnections.com. We are a proud sponsor of Catholic Answers Live.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
I know it's going to be a great hour next hour, but we should have just made this a two-hour thing. Catholic Answers Live, Church in the News this hour with Dr. Bunsen, because there's so many things to talk about. I was just thinking, I haven't talked about Charlie Gard. We haven't talked about Cardinal Mueller or the impending collapse of the ISIS state and all that. So we may get a chance to get to a couple of those things, but let's continue with our callers. David in the Bronx, New York, listening on EWTN, your question or comment for Dr. Bunsen.
Yes, Dr. Bunsen, I have a rhetorical question. Why, when it comes to scandals involving homosexuals, including pedophilia, the onus of moral failings falls on the church and the priesthood rather than serving as an exemplar, exposing the deleterious character of the homosexual and proving that the church is correct in stating that the behavior is intrinsically disordered, which should be shunned and corrected?
Well, you're asking a question that's very pertinent to the conversation of the way media and so much in culture frames any argument. The baseline assumption now across almost all secular culture is that the Catholic Church is backward, it is negative, it is condemnatory. When, if you look at what the Church actually teaches, what the Catechism itself says, there is deep compassion for the homosexual person, but also the necessity for clarity. We're not doing anyone any favors by watering down what we believe. And I think there's a very strong argument to be made that when we look at culture today, it has been our failure to speak with clarity and compassion, charity, but also forcefulness on what we believe and what we teach, which is the truth, that this, in not just in this issue, but in a host of other ones, from abortion to euthanasia to family life to marriage, that it's when we fail to speak powerfully but also clearly that we see these breakdowns in the understanding of wider culture, and we then lose our capacity to dialogue effectively with culture.
But David, are you under the impression that the secular media should be doing a better job of explaining our side of these things? Because I wonder if you might not wait in vain for a long time for that. And I mean that quite seriously, Dan.
No, I understand that 100%. No, I don't expect it from the media. I expect a position from the church realizing, at least, and through forms of media like EWTN, putting out a counter statement where we recognize that the homosexuals are taking up positions in the clergy, knowing full well that they don't respect the teachings of the church regarding homosexuality, and that they're going to completely practice what they choose to practice in office, with bringing all this condemnation on the church and all the practitioners who are following the teachings of the church, that it's actually a form of a spiritual combat that they're engaging in.
Dr. Bunsen?
Yeah, I would agree. I think what you need to have priests who are willing to speak from the pulpit, who are willing to go out into the streets, into the homes of their parishioners, and take that risk of being unpopular, to take the risk of going against what are the tides of contemporary culture. And oftentimes that is something that a lot of priests, and I'm not condemning priests across the board, but some priests that I think probably all of us know, one or two, simply don't want to go there. In most cases, in my experience, it isn't that they agree with those false teachings or the watering down of the faith. It's just that they're afraid at times to be unpopular. And lay people, all of us suffer from the same problem, that we don't want to be condemned as bigots. We don't want to be attacked as homophobes, as intolerant. And that ceding of the high ground, so to speak, positions us very poorly when we are preparing to speak out on key issues. We begin to lose our capacity to communicate effectively. And that's what I mean also by the fact that we need to develop not just communication strategies. It isn't going to be a five-point plan, but it really is recapturing a sense of missionary discipleship, evangelizing zeal, but also that speaking with clarity.
Yeah, and I want to go on to the next questions and get to them, but when we spend so much time, I mean, and it's of the nature of the questions that we have about priests in the news, it can start to feel like, well, we're really picking on priests today, and
I
know that that's not what you're doing, and I don't. Certainly, at Catholic Answers, we don't. It gives us another reason to be grateful to the very many faithful priests that we do have.
Well, and that exactly, and that's one of the most important points that we can make. That the thing we need to do is to go and support our priests in their daily work, in their ministry, to give them the courage to know that we have their back, that we are behind them. We are praying for them. We are supporting them in every way that we can. And we're encouraging them to be faithful witnesses, to be that altar Christus.
We go now to John in Quincy, California, listening on Immaculate Heart Radio. John, your question or comment on the church in the news with Dr. Matthew Bunsen.
Well, you bet. There's a recent article in the Washington Post, it was today, that said, Confidant of Pope Francis condemns U.S. religious right. And it goes on to say that some Catholics who are voting for instance, for President Trump are promoting a xenophobic and Islamophobic vision. And it's basically, it doesn't like the theory of the wall and protecting one's borders and so forth. And you know what? As a Catholic, my number one concern is life. And this is, for the first time in almost a decade, we have a president, or more than that, we have a president who has said, we're not going to fund overseas abortions and spread that horror outside our borders. And now he has the opportunity to defund Planned Parenthood for a year. And so I guess my comment would be, and I would love to hear your thoughts, is that this social justice, while it is essential to our worship and our communion with our brothers and sisters, it doesn't mean much if you're not alive.
Fair enough. Dr. Bunsen, you wanted to respond to that?
Yeah, I think what you're referring to is an article that just appeared in the Italian Jesuit publication called La Civiltà Cattolica, which is an almost quasi-official publication at this point because of the influence, especially of its editor, who is the Jesuit priest, Father Antonio Spadaro, who is a very influential figure in this pontificate. The article itself, the analysis, was co-authored by him and a Reverend Marcello Figueroa, who was a Presbyterian pastor, who was recently named the editor-in-chief of L'Osservatore Romano's Argentinian edition. All that matters because the two of them really represent, I think, a perspective of many Europeans, and I would say, too, that many European Catholics have, of the way that American religious life is going right now. And in this article, they very, I won't say savagely, but they very, very sharply critique what they see as an alliance between the fundamentalist Catholics, as they describe them, and the evangelicals. Now, they're trying to discuss, I think, what is a phenomenon of the political right. In particular, we saw this with Donald Trump's campaign in 2016. And the evangelical movement. And there is, in many ways, common cause. Now, they see a lot of that with rather broad sweeping generalizations of a Manichaean way of looking at the world. They see it as well as a kind of false form of ecumenical dialogue. And they are fairly dismissive of what they term Catholic integralists. And really what they're evidencing, I think, is just a worldview of Western European life today and so many of the sort of assumptions that people make about the right in the United States that you can go all the way back to various analysts of American political life in the last 50 years. So it's an opinion that you will find in around the dinner table. In many, many different settings in Europe today. And there are quite a few critiques that are already emerging out of it. I would point out, for example, the Catholic World Report with a piece by Dr. Samuel Gregg, who does a pretty thorough analysis of this piece. So I would encourage you to read that.
David, did we? Nope. Oh, that was John. John, are you still there with us? And did that address your concern?
I am.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I am.
Did you want to respond?
Oh, I just said I think that I appreciate that you had read it and know of this. And number two, I just think that we're not being very ecumenical with our own Catholic Church members. We're concerned more about, it seems to me, while the accusation is saying that we are those who are rather right-leaning for the purposes of life and so forth and are not being
appreciated,
listened to. Yeah.
All right.
I would say that.
I only interrupt you because we just have a minute left. Dr. Bunsen, does that ring true to you at all that the pro-life American Catholics are not being appreciated at the Vatican?
No, actually, I think Pope Francis is ardently pro-life. And I think given the reforms that we're seeing right now, let's just wait and see what happens there.
Dr. Matthew Bunsen, first of all, John, thanks for that call. I'm sorry I had to kind of clip you off a little bit there because I knew the top of the hour was coming. Dr. Matthew Bunsen, the senior contributor to EWTN and senior editor at the National Catholic Register, thanks so much for being with us for this hour.
A privilege to be with you.
I really
had fun.
I really feel like we should do it more. Like that, I'm serious. Do you got any time or are you totally
busy?
Yeah,
absolutely.
You got like 800 jobs. I mean, just reading your bio exhausted me.
No, I'd love to. I mean, the questions were great. They were wonderful tonight and I appreciate it.
Yeah, very good. And this Sunday, just check your schedule on your local Catholic radio station and you can find Register Radio where you will find Dr. Bunsen again. Next hour, Father Paul Scalia will be here with us to talk about the saints. Hang around for a great conclusion to our work week here at Catholic Answers while we talk about the saints. Be right back with you in just a minute, right after this.